Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
And on Pippa's Planet this afternoon, and it's always essential for us to look at our planet and look at our world around us and see exactly what we are doing to the world. You've heard Hans van Ukelum talking to me, and he said that, you know, what the global warming on the North Pole is so incredible that, you know, it's quite visible. You can actually see it out there, and they take people to the Antarctica, and it's not that visible yet. So we need to look after ourselves, and we all know that our oceans are under immense pressure from overfishing, from climate change, and also from plastic pollution, which is one of the big threats to the ocean these days, which is why we celebrated the news last week that an additional 20 sections of our coastline and ocean have been designated as marine protected areas. The move increases our protected marine area from less than 0.5% of our ocean's waters to around 5%, and three of the new protected areas and zones fall under the management of SANParks, namely Robben Island Marine Protected Area, Namakwa National Park, and the Addo Elephant Park out in the Eastern Cape area. Now, Dr. Anne Westhuizen is SANParks National Marine Coordinator, and she joins me on the line for a deeper understanding of the topic. A very good afternoon, Dr. Westhuizen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, and afternoon to you and the listeners.
A lot of people don't understand the concept and probably think to themselves, you know, that the ocean is just the ocean. Johannesburg has come down here and think to themselves, oh, it's a lekker baie see. So can you explain to us what it actually means in practical terms for us to have an area designated as an MPA?
Yes. An MPA is essentially something similar to a national park in the sea. So if you can imagine Kruger National Park, it's the same thing but in the sea. We also need to protect our coastal species and habitats. The difference between a marine protected area and some of our national parks is that in marine protected areas you have zoned areas. So we have zoned areas of protection, which means you're not allowed to take anything out or catch fish. But in other areas, we do allow for those activities within the marine protected area.
And I think when we're talking about marine protected areas, a lot of people only think crayfish and paralamoon. Are there any other species, and how wide is the species that we actually need to protect?
Oh, absolutely. It's much wider. It's all our lionfish that we love to eat. From, you know, species like snook to our reef species like red Roman and others. But then it's also habitats, you know, the actual sea floor. We have kelp beds, we have mud banks, we have rocky reefs. And there's so many of these habitats that don't have protection that we also have to look after. And then there's the other things like the birds, for instance. So we have many different threatened seabirds. If you think about Robben Island, we have got penguins, we've got different species of cormorants, etc.
And chatting this afternoon to Dr. Anne Westhuizen, she's the National Marine Coordinator for Parks and Planning and Development at SANParks. And we're chatting about protecting our areas and marine protected areas specifically. How long have you been lobbying for this increased protection, Doctor?
Sure, we've been working on this for a long time, since 2006. I specifically started planning around the Addo MPA in the Eastern Cape, but Sandy has also been planning towards a lot of these offshore MPAs that was part of the declaration now. So the planning for I'd say most of these 20 MPAs have been going on for at least 13 years. And then the last few years, we were busy with, you know, writing the regulations, negotiating with stakeholders, and finalizing the zonation.
Mm. What did this lobbying entail? You know, run us from the start, because, I mean, now we had 0.5% of our ocean waters. We now have 5% of our ocean waters protected. Did you guys have to go to Parliament? Did you have to sort of, you know, do a lot of research before presenting things to Parliament and to the city?
Yes, well, it starts off by doing your basic scientific research, because obviously before you can conserve something, you need to know what's there. And specifically in the sea, it's very difficult. You know, on land, you can take a plane and fly over a piece of land and you can do a vegetation survey. But in the sea, it's much more difficult. You need big vessels. You need equipment to get under the water to survey what's there. So a lot of research goes into that. And then after that, you need to consult with all your key stakeholders, obviously all your municipalities, your local authorities. And in the end, all 20 of these were presented in Parliament, and Cabinet approved them in October last year. And hence we had the declarations this year.
And, you know, all of this in terms of what's happening in the sea and this complete ecosystem, you know, overexploited stock like abalone and fish and lobster in that particular. What is the full impact of it all of us? Why have we gotten to this point where we actually have depleted so much of it and now we need to sort of reverse that process?
I think it's just human nature. We perceive the sea as completely bountiless. Even does biophysics here. And I think that's just the perception we have as humans. And we cannot perceive that we actually can have an impact to such an extent that we might push species to extinction. And that's why we are where we are in need for conserving our abalone, our fish, our birds, and all of them.
You know, what is there that you would actually love to say to people who live in these areas? I lived in Hermanus for about 2 to 2.5 years, and, you know, there was never a question. I'm talking about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and very quickly it sort of caught up with us because of poaching, because of the fact that, you know, we commercially do these things, even in Knysna with oysters and stuff like that. You know, we commercially do these things, and we don't actually realize what the impact of it is. And you know, what do you say to people out there who, especially in the Western Cape, where we, like you say, we take these things for granted and we think that we can actually sort of just go to the sea and just fish and get it for free?
Yeah, I think us as consumers and as people living at the coast can impact and help conservation by our choices we make. So when you go to the fish market or the fish shop or the restaurant where you buy fish, look for the green labeled fish. We have WWF SASSI program where they have a robot system, red, orange and green. It works like the robot system.
Yeah.
Where you have lists of fish which are on the green list or the orange list or the red list. So make your wise choice. Support the green species that are their populations are still viable. They come from sustainable fisheries versus a orange or a red listed fish, which are already in trouble or overexploited.
And we're chatting this afternoon to Dr. Anne Wester, the National Marine Coordinator. And if you've got any calls, maybe you feel that there is an area that needs to be protected where you see sort of poaching taking place, or where you just see people taking too much out of the sea, because we tend to think that the sea has just got this in abundance. Give me a call, 021-446-0567, or you can send us a WhatsApp message to 072-567-1567. Doctor, how are you going to manage these areas going forward?
Well, like with any other conservation area, poaching is always an issue, and that's something we need to face as South Africans. Mm. I think everybody is aware of the rhino poaching issue. So in the ocean, we generally deal with the abalone poaching. So for management in these areas, it's just making sure that you have your manpower and your budgets in place, making sure that you've got the feet on the ground, so to say, to implement on the ground.
And the thing is actually is that as people, we expect that when we go down to the west coast to Lumbards Bay, we expect a bit of crayfish or we expect a bit of snook in the area. And when we go to Hermanus, we expect that, you know, there'll be somebody who's got a bit of abalone or somebody who's got or when our tourists come and visit, for instance, they come here for the fact that we have this marine life available and we have this as dishes on our menus. What is the impact on the tourism industry for this?
Well, you can look at it two ways. Number one, NPAs are wonderful places for tourism. You know, we have activities such as whale watching, scuba diving, you know, leisure and outdoor activities that all takes place within marine protected areas. And that's a positive thing because you want people to go out and enjoy these areas. On the opposite side, when you do have poaching or other activities in these NPAs, tourists don't like to see people fishing in an NPA or poachers in an NPA. And from that point of view, it can impact tourism.
Chatting this afternoon to Dr. Anay Westhuizen, National Marine Coordinator for Parks Planning and Development at Sanparks. And we're having a look at the new protected zones that fall under the management of Sanparks. And, of course, these areas are Robben Island Marine Protected Area, one in Namaqua National Park and the Addo Elephant Park. Chat to us about the Addo Elephant Park. How does this fall within your ambit?
Well, out of the three NPAs that were declared for us, that one is probably the largest. It sort of sits in the northern half of Algoa Bay. So any listeners that know PE will know Algoa Bay is pretty big. And it stretches from the Kucha Harbour, which I think a lot of people would have heard of, all the way around the bay, past Bird Island, towards Port Alfred Way. So it's quite a large NPA. Contains four or five islands, and those islands are very important because they contain the largest remaining population of penguins in South Africa, and it's an essential breeding area for those animals.
And we have a voice note from somebody who sent us a voice note in, and we'd like to for you to respond to this.
I am all for conservation of oceans and those kinds of things. The thing that horrified me to learn quite recently is that a prawn is a double red fish or a double red seafood item or whatever you want to call it, because it kills eight other sea creatures for every one that we catch because we dredge it and so on, and yet we sell it like it's water. I find that a little frustrating, to be honest. Anything that's red should not be sold, I would imagine.
Steve in Simerstown there. Dr. Anay, I didn't know that either, but I mean, prawns are not, do we locally have prawns or do we import the most of it?
Both. I think what you refer to was our own prawn fishery, which sits off the KZN coast. We catch the prawns by net, so we do catch a lot of bycatch in those fisheries. So that's why I think it's either orange or red. I'm not sure on our specific fishery. I know a lot of our prawns are imported, and they are mostly red and orange because the environmental impact. These are farmed prawns, and they're generally farmed in areas where mangrove trees get cut down to make these huge big ponds where they need to grow the prawns. So that's why they are listed red.
Got a call in from Roy in Simonstown, Doctor. We're chatting to Dr. Anay Westhuizen. He wants to chat about poaching from other nationalities. Roy, very good afternoon to you. Your comment and your question for the doctor?
Hi, thanks. Hello, Dr. Westhuizen. I live in Simonstown, and recently I've read a report that on our marine ocean border, we have Chinese motherships sitting, and the smaller ships come out at night, come into our ocean and poach using dragnets, which pretty much take up everything as bycatch. They then get processed on the motherships, and then they get exported or imported back into South Africa. The coastal fishing of abalone and crayfish seems to be run by Chinese triads using drugs as well. Mm. And living in Simonstown, I watch no action being done by our fisheries protection vessels. In fact, two of them are sitting here in harbour. Month after month, and the Protea research vessel also hasn't left harbour for perhaps a month or two. It goes out and comes back in. It wouldn't. It seems as if there is no government, either political will or budget, to actually do anything to prevent real overfishing on the on our marine borders. I'm not sure if it's 200 miles out to sea or.
And that's Roy. Your thoughts on that, Doctor? I think, you know, what you've been lobbying for is a step in the right direction, and that, you know, things going forward will seem quite differently.
Yeah, I think we're looking at our management of our coastal resources from two sort of scales.
Mm.
Number one, the issue he spoke about is the management of our resources on a national scale, and that falls under what the old department used to be, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Yeah.
So the fisheries branch that sits here in Cape Town, they have those big protection vessels, enforcement vessels. I think we all know that they have not been particularly efficient in the last few years for various reasons. But that's the departments that are responsible for sort of our national, you know, on large scale enforcement and looking after our resources. Where us as conservation organizations are a little bit smaller, and we focus more on the coastal MPAs per se.
Mm.
That's a big problem.
Yeah, chatting to Dr. Anae West, there's a National Marine Coordinator for Parks Planning and Development at SANParks. And we got some good news that, you know, moving from about 0.5% of our ocean waters being protected, we're now at around about 5%. Your conservation experiences out in the Sedgefield area. David, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Hello to the doctor, and interested to hear the conversation. I had a bit of a sort of a heads up at Gerica's point the other day when I was visiting Sedgefield and noticed people loading 4 or 5 large 20-30 kilogram bags of oysters into their cars. And I said, well, this can't be happening. There are no national parks authorities around. So I said, you know, do you have a permit? And the guy said, yeah, no, we've got a permit. We're allowed to do this. So I followed it up with the local conservation authorities. And they said, yes, all these guys have to do is phone in and the day they're going to do the collection, and that's it. There was nobody checking what they were taking off the rocks. But it looked to me quite surprising and quite sort of badly managed and unofficial the way harvesting was taking place on our coastline. And it felt to me something that should be explored a little bit, certainly with consumers who might be eating those wild oysters that are taken off the rock.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, David, is that a lot of people actually, you know, eat and consume things, and they don't tend to ask exactly where this comes from. Am I correct, Doctor?
Yes, absolutely. As I said earlier in the conversation, us as consumers have to take responsibility for ourselves and our own choices we make. So every time you eat seafood, find out, ask, what is it, red, green, orange? Where is it fished? Is it imported? Is it local? So we have that responsibility. But I think just coming back to the comment in Sedgefield, there are several oyster collection permits that are issued by DAF, or the Fisheries Department, and each of those have their own permit conditions. I am not aware of the specific conditions for the garden route section, but I would urge the public, whenever they come across something like that and they don't feel comfortable what they see, is to report it, because that also helps as conservation agencies, you know, getting the news in from outside.
Yeah, I think it's key to anything, Dr. Anae, is that a lot of people out there see these things happen and they don't report it, whereas if it gets reported, you have a bit of a database about what's happening, where it is happening, what is going on, and you can sort of work out a reaction plan to that. Dr. Anae Westerson, thank you so much for your time on a Friday afternoon, and have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.